And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Raffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, Blake. This is going to be an interesting show. I feel like this Jeremiah Smith situation is picking up a lot of steam completely out of nowhere. I'm doing good. I'm excited to get into talking about that because I'm sure it'll generate plenty of reactions.
Within the first 35 seconds of Joe Day of that article with Jeremiah Smith coming out, I texted one said Joe DeLeon. Would you like to repeat what I said? Because I think that's complete and utter horseshit.
Yeah, well, you told me that you thought it was total BS, that you didn't think that it was real. Yeah. I'll save our thoughts for when we get into it, but yeah, it does seem pretty ludicrous to have offered him that much money. $10 million is a lot of money.
Because it's not true.
Well, we don't know for certainty.
For a 100% certainty that that is not true.
Off of what, though? What are you going off of that you think?
Well, we can kind of get into it. We'll get into it. You know how I know? Because the NFL has taught you and I one thing. You know what that is? That even backup quarterbacks will make more money than some premier receivers in a year. Like, let me give an example. You had a quarterback in the NFL market this year who is not good at all, that is going to make a 1 year, $20+ million deal fully guaranteed. Meanwhile, there are probably seven receivers out of the top 10 in the league that aren't making $20 million a year. This is a sports is especially football is a quarterback driven league.
So first of all, there's a lot of receivers that are making more than
you get my point. You get my gist.
Yeah. Well, actually, I gotta be honest with you, I don't totally get your point.
He's not going to make more money than the quarterbacks. That's what I'm saying. Not the premier
one. Is one of the greatest wide receivers,
and he ain't making more money. And he's not making – you want another – he's not the highest paid player on his own roster.
He made Julian Sain into a Heisman finalist. His impact, I think, exceeds a typical receiver.
Sure. However, he may be the best player, but I guarantee you he's not being paid the most.
On his team? Well, we don't know that. There's no transparency.
There is no transparency, but regardless of all of that, I find it very hard to believe that he was going to hit the open market and he knew he'd make $10 million. And I got to be a little, I guess we're just kind of into it now.
Yeah.
Let's get to a quick promo and we'll get back into it. By the way, everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Share to all those groups. If you're on Facebook, it's all those social media pages. You're watching us, listening to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell, wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. Every Raffino and Joe show is brought to you by our good friends over at FanDuel. Download the FT Sportsbook app today. Use your mobile device in doing so. If you have any thoughts, questions, concerns, go to FanDuel.com/RG for more details so you can set your preferences. And that is why Joe and I are partnered with our good friends over at FanDuel. Okay, hit the like and share, subscribe down below. In case you missed it today, Chris Lowe of On3 came out with an article, and Jeremiah Smith is quoted in there saying if he would have hit the open market, that he knew that he would make $10 million through, I'm assuming, TV revenue and NIL. Joe, to pick this back up, I'm just calling BS on it. I do not believe that at all. Like, at all. So, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this, but my antennas went up because I'm calling complete BS. And to be completely honest with you, I guess my question would be, did Chris Lowe call BS?
Well, okay, so this is where I think that there's a mistranslation here. This was the full excerpt from the article from Chris Lowe. But in full transparency, had Smith genuinely been chasing the money during his recent portal cycle, even in this era when teenagers are becoming instant millionaires, his number would have been staggering. Over $10 million easy, Smith said, smiling, but that's not how I operate. Miami wasn't the only school making a push for Smith, who never entered the transfer portal. He said the calls started coming in as soon as Ohio State beat Notre Dame in the national championship game. to cap his freshman season in 2024. Teams were telling my agent they had a certain amount of money for me to come there. So he's saying that he had an offer. He's saying that he had a $10 million offer.
Yeah, no, he didn't.
It sounds like, and this is part of what we talked about previously, where when he spoke to the media, alluded to it was Miami who had aggressively pushed for him. And then now in this article, he directly implicates Miami for saying that Miami tried to get me to come home to come play for the University of Miami. And I think that what he's stating here is that he was offered $10 million by Miami to come home. And I think that there's an understanding of the value of having a guy that was a hometown hero as Jeremiah Smith coming back for his final season in college football, that they would have given him that much money. You add Jeremiah Smith and you automatically, their national championship chances would have been far and away the best out of any team in college football. You put him on any of the top contending teams I'd go as far as the top 15. You plug him into any team in the top 15, he is worth $10 million. He's that good of a receiver. When healthy, he is a game-altering receiver.
Sure. That has nothing to do with him being the highest paid player by a landslide. I'm calling bullshit. Because the highest paid player based off of money that's being paid right now, whether it's buying out a contract or TV revenue, is Darian Mensah. And I got to be completely blunt with you. Darian Mensah is going to impact every single game that Miami is in more than Jeremiah Smith.
Wait, but we can't include buyout money for the conversation.
But that's my whole point.
Contract.
You mean to tell me that the quarterbacks that hit the open market that teams are bidding on, offensive linemen, edge guys. Now, I understand that those guys aren't Jeremiah Smith. You mean to tell me that he's doubling their worth? He's not doubling their production. He's not double their value. I call BS. Jeremiah Smith, as great as he is, as amazing as he is, I would even go as far as to say he's the best player in college football. He's not doubling Jordan Seaton, who hit the open market as an offensive lineman. He's not doing that, Joe. I'm sorry. He's not.
I think that you're undervaluing how good Jeremiah Smith is. I understand. Wait. There's two conversations that are happening here. You are bringing up important points. If we're not talking about Jeremiah Smith and it was just a different, like Cam Coleman, if we were talking about Cam Coleman, this would be a completely different conversation because positional value absolutely is a thing. I actually disagree with you using Jordan Seaton as an example because the NFL shows us that the top wide receivers make more than the top offensive lineman.
No, that's not what wide receiver. I said double than what Jordan Seaton made. That's okay. BS.
But someone of Jordan Seaton's a really good player and was a solid starting offensive lineman for Colorado. We'll eventually talk about him when we do our LSU breakdown and talk a little bit about how he's been doing in the spring.
Than Cam Coleman?
Is Cam Coleman, do we have a confirmed number?
2 to 2.5 million.
Compare their production over the last 2 years. His production is ridiculously higher. Like, we're talking about arguably one of the greatest, just forget production for a second, physical profile, one of the most physically gifted wide receivers that has ever played college football. He is in the top three of that category. There have only been so many human beings that have played football and also produced at the level that he had. I think that there is a different market for a guy of Jeremiah Smith's rarity.
That's just not true. Because I can name two wide receivers in the last 6 years who half of their season equals his production in this past one. His name was Jamar Chase. So let's not act as if that we haven't seen this high level of production before. That's number one. Number two, at the end of the season, you had 7 total catches against Michigan where you did not impact the game whatsoever. I remember that you didn't impact the game in game one versus Texas because you had 3 drops. Against Michigan, he had 3 catches for 40 yards. Freshman. Against you, that's not him as a true freshman. This is 2025. And against UCLA, he had 4 catches for 40 yards. And you're trying to convince me that he had a value worth double of what we saw guys like Cam Coleman, almost $8 million more than what Cam Coleman is reportedly making. I'm sorry, that's just not true. And let me tell you something else. This is the second. Hold on. I let you go. This is the second time that he has taken a shot at Miami. The second time. So why are you constantly being chirpy on Miami? Is it because they beat you?
Shocked that an athlete is taking shots at a team that beat them. That happens all the time.
Okay. So can we get to the root of the problem? You came out 2 weeks ago and you stated, and you took a little shot at Miami saying that they were going after you when you were pressed on it. Then number two, you're going back through Chris Lowe saying that they were all, let's just call it what it is, that they reportedly were offering you $10 million. You lost to them. So now you're getting chirpy. Hold on. You're getting chirpy off of a loss. I'm telling you right now, I don't care what you or anybody tells me. He did not get an evaluation, nor was he going to get paid $10 million. Y'all got to flush that shit because it's not true.
Okay, so I want to get back to, because you started a really good debate that was not the angle that I had initially anticipated for us to take.
Okay, what was the angle that you were taking?
The angle I was going to talk about was mostly Miami, the allegations that are coming against Miami in terms of.
Well, I started that to get to them because that's what the core of the problem is here.
Okay. I would like to just finish off this debate that we just started here that we were having on where does Jeremiah Smith in the picture of greatest receivers that have stepped on the field. Like, I don't think that Ja'Marr Chase is a good comparison for him because I think you're misunderstanding what I'm talking about here with Jeremiah Smith.
He's a combination,
but I'm saying the combination of elite production to start a career and also just rare physical profile.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There have not been recruits that have been spit out into the college football world that can move and play the way that Jeremiah Smith has been able to, not to mention the fact that he's getting bigger and stronger and faster every single year. He would be in the conversation of just rare players at the receiver position. He would be top three. And in terms of his production not stepping up in some games, like we talked a lot about how Julian Sand struggled in big games. The guy has to get the ball thrown to him. And Julian Sand did not step up in those moments.
But that's my point. You're literally making my point. There's no way in human hell that his level of production, as much as it is doubling some of these guys that open the market, that went to the open market. It's not true.
I don't agree with that. I think that you put him on a team. If you're a team that has a championship level quarterback like Miami, and you think that you can go get a player like this, open the checkbook, offer however much money. Forget it being tampering.
You're falling for the lie. I think you're.
I don't care if I fall. I don't think
you should care.
Forget if it's a lie or not for a second. This is a legitimate, interesting discussion to ask, and I'm going to title this video, is Jeremiah Smith worth $10 million? And you know what the answer to my question is?
Forget if it's real or not.
Jeremiah Smith is as worth $10 million as he possibly could be. And I hope Ohio State's doing everything possible to pay him $10 million because
he's not. No, he's not. Can I tell you why he's not?
Why?
Because your budget and TV revenue is worth $20. He's not worth half of it.
You wouldn't get all that from TV revenue.
I understand that. But, Joe, I'm sorry to tell you this. I hate to say it like this, but this is the truth. Do I think that Jeremiah Smith is a better player than Darian Mensah? Yes, by far. Will he have a bigger impact on games than a quarterback? No, and he never will. He never will. He will never impact a game more than any quarterback that he plays with in his life, ever. That's not even an opinion. That is a fact. The quarterback drives the open market. And now you want me to believe, even if Cam Coleman's TV revenue and NIL is worth half of what Jeremiah Smith allegedly stated, I have a hard time believing that. Can I tell you what this reminds me of?
What?
Jaden Rashada. Let me give you an example as to why. All of those numbers, remember, when Jaden Rashada was going to Florida and they were saying people are going to be paying him $4 to $5 million. Well, Joe, we found out in open court it wasn't worth that. If you remember Nico Iamalava is set to make $10 million per on three. And then all of a sudden, it didn't even come close to that. I think that we're falling for these big numbers, what's not realistically true. Now, let's get to the core of the can we get to the core of the problem here?
Yeah, go ahead. I don't agree with you, but
okay, well, you don't have to agree with me there, but you're going to agree with me on this one, I promise you. Why are you going back-to-back weeks attacking Miami? Because the last time that I checked, the last game that you played, even though you had a phenomenal game, 7 catches, 157 yards, 22 yards, 22.5 technically, 22 yards per catch and a touchdown. Joe, why is this happening? A dude that's not been chirpy at all, why has he been chirpy on Miami where he's from the last 2 weeks?
Well, I actually don't mind him having an edge.
I don't mind it either, but why?
Okay, so first of all, we talked about this the first time that he kind of got goaded into
this one
talking about it. This time, well, we don't know that for sure because we're going off of
you mean to tell me that Chris Lowe of all people pressed him so hard in a 101 conversation that forced this out of him?
I don't know what Chris Lowe asked him before it. That's not included in the article. There's no video of the interaction. Seriously, we have no idea. We don't know if he could have asked him 9 times. He could have sat there and go, was it Miami? How much did Miami offer you? How much did Miami offer you?
Why didn't he learn from the first time?
I'm not saying that he's a victim in this situation. I'm not. But, Blake, I kind of don't mind this from him. I think he's protecting his house to a degree, pointing out that what Miami did was inappropriate. To send a ridiculous offer. Maybe it wasn't $10 million. It was still a ridiculously high number. Maybe they threw something huge at him. Forget what the number actually is. Maybe he's trying to protect his house and say, a university that I considered going to, that I'm from, that we lost to, wanted me so damn bad. And I'm not going to let anybody keep me from staying at Ohio State. That was what the rest of the article was. That was the rest of him saying is, why would I go to another team then when we have this whole thing already built? That was one of a quote that he said to Chris Lowe. I see this as him. Yeah, I'm sure that he's a little bothered that he lost to them. And I think that it accentuates how bothered he is by the whole circumstance that they turned around and they're trying to offer him a shitload of money to come play for him.
What happened? Because let me tell you what it sounds like to me. Because this is the second time you went after that ass. Now, I would understand it, which I actually agree with you. I actually kind of like the chirpiness, right? Kind of the edge. I kind of like it. You lost to him. You don't like it. You're going out there letting it be known. I don't like this shit. I love that. Why do you keep bringing up money? Because this comes off to me as they opened conversations, they had conversations, you got into such a conversation with them that they offered you money? Because unless Mario Cristobal or someone came out there and just sent a text or through his dad or through an agent said, hey, we're giving him $10 million, click, why are you answering the phone call? Why are you allowing your agent to? So my question is, how did you get to that number? How did you find out what they were going to pay you? What happened in the fall? Was there a fallout here? Was there something that bad that happened to where you're now pissed off and you're going out there in the media and you're talking about it? Because how did you get the number? And Chris Lowe should have asked, well, how did you get the number? Because
I can't go all the way there.
Well, you and I both know. Let's take Darian Mensah for just a quick second. How long did it take Miami to get the number of the buyout? Well, we actually know. It took a month because it went to court. They got a number and they paid it. You can't convince me that there weren't at least, maybe it was not him. You can't really convince me that someone in his camp wasn't talking to Miami now that this is going twice. Because there's no way Miami just came out and said, we're going to give you $10 million total dollars. Hi, how you doing?
I believe that. No, they have been known to do this. Miami, we discussed this. As inappropriate as it is to tamper. It also, we talked about how in a system where there is not really any repercussions for doing it,
you mean to tell me
that they dollar amount to big name players and see if they'll come?
You mean to tell me that they put that in a text and they didn't have a meeting with somebody about it? There's no way.
I don't think. I'm not saying that it's as simple as they just texted, "Hey, Jeremiah Smith, $10 million."
How did he get there?
I'm sure a good agent should be taking phone calls all the time, and with the ability for there to be an open market. If someone from Miami reached out to his agent, which was highlighted in the quote that I read there from the interview, that teams were just straight up calling his agent and saying, "We'll give him X amount. We've got this amount of money for him. What would it take?" That's how I read it. I don't think that any agent, no matter the level, should just straight up shut down interest. You should always take the conversation.
No, I agree with you there. But now that you've gone after the same school twice, it feels like to me that something has happened. Because
I think Crystal followed up on it. I think that that's what this was.
No, I got to be a little honest with you.
Going viral and knowing that he would go more viral.
No, he didn't. Because he could have pressed how you got those numbers. It is your journalistic integrity to go, okay, how did you find out?
What do you mean,
how did it get there? Okay, what are the schools?
Well, he mentioned Miami. Don't
tell me that he followed up.
Mentioned Miami.
You said you had multiple schools that were calling you, and you didn't ask what schools?
It was obvious that Miami was one of them. He spoke out on that specifically. So I'm sure that Chris Lowe was following up on that viral moment. That's how I read this. I don't think Jeremiah Smith walked into an interview with Chris Lowe and thought, I need to make Miami look stupid in this interview about
me. No, I don't. But I think he got hoodwinked there again.
I don't agree with that.
First off, before we move on, number one, I just don't believe in today's college football. In 5 years, very well could be a situation where a wide receiver is going to make $10 million. They might not be Jeremiah Smith, however. I don't believe that. I don't believe it. Because, Joe, we have quarterback contracts that are coming out. We have these things that are being posted where Texas Tech is releasing Brendan Sorsby's contract from LSU that LSU offered. And I have a very, very hard time believing a $2 million base contract from TV revenue and then $1.5 million when it comes to NIL promises. You're doubling that? I'm sorry. That's not realistic to me. Then you have the Cam Coleman situation. I get you're talking about production. $8 million more, it does not pass the smell test. Let me tell you what it smells like to me. What it smells like to me is that you have an article here, to your point, to follow up on a viral moment, and you put things in there and worded it in ways to where you're trying to stir the pot like they did in the Jada Rashada situation. That's how it comes off to me.
I think that you're over analyzing this. I think that Chris Lowe deliberately wanted to ask questions about this. I think that Jeremiah Smith felt comfortable with the fact that he knows that he's sticking at Ohio State, and he already brought it up. Not smart that he brought it up, but he was goaded into it by the Ohio media folks that were trying to ask him about it, and he already brought it up, and he just felt comfortable in that setting to have shared that number. I don't think that $10 million is outrageous. I think it's completely outrageous. I think that for as rare of a player as he is, forget even wide receivers, just a rare player to step, one of the greatest freshmen ever that it's ever just played college football. He's going to go down as one of the, depending on what he does this season, after just 3 years, he'll probably go down as one of the greatest players in college football history. If he can match this production for three straight years, and also the production to go along with who he is physically, he is a very, very rare category. He is up there with the Julio Joneses of the college football world, of being ridiculously athletic and the impact that you can provide in any offense that you play in.
No argument. We're not arguing that.
If you want to win a championship, you go in and you can get Jeremiah Smith, throw $10 million at him.
I'm sorry. I'm not buying that. Because I got to be real with you. On3 came out with the Rashada and Nico Iamalava stuff about a $10 million thing without running that down, and it wound up being not true. And I think we're having a situation here.
He's not Rashada, but he's not Jaden Rashada.
Okay, sounds good. Nico Iamalava. I mean, Joe, you
not
went
Nico
from a
– either. He's better than Nico.
Thank you for making my point. But they're talking about a $10 million thing, and On3 never got put in their place in reference to saying that that was false, because we knew it was false. I got to be honest with you. I think he came out and said something that he shouldn't have said. And I just don't believe that anybody is offering him $10 million. I don't buy it. I'm not buying it, nor will I ever buy it.
I think that if there's one player now and probably for the next 10, 15 years that will ever be worth that much money, Jeremiah Smith is that player.
Okay, let me ask you this question. If you're one of those teams and you have other holes, you're going to give all of that to one guy when you can fill it with other needs too?
If you're like Miami and you have a war chest of money to work with.
Yeah, but Miami didn't go in the portal like that. Not this go around. They did go get Mensah and they got Wilson.
They didn't need to go in the portal like that, but I think that there's a deep connection here with him and the fact that they wanted him the first time around, the expectation that he was going to play at Miami the first time around. He ended up picking Ohio State and spurning them. The recognition of what that would mean to the – think about not only if you have Jeremiah Smith on your team, Blake, what that does for your title chances. What does that do for Mario Cristobal and his football program? The hometown hero comes home and wins a national championship, is a Heisman finalist at the University of Miami. It would turn Miami into a juggernaut in recruiting in the state of Florida. It would completely reshape every narrative and possibility for what Mario Cristobal could accomplish. I think that this is a very unique circumstance.
But you're perceiving on what you think could have happened. Now we got to
come perceiving. But you're perceiving off of what you think happened.
Not perceiving. You know how it's not perceiving? Because I have a database of people hitting the open market. And let me tell you what normal human beings don't do. Normal human beings don't turn down $6 million more dollars. You wanted to say at Ohio State that, hold on. You wanted to say at Ohio State that bad that you turned down $6 million? Bullshit.
I think that he recognizes that he's already been having success. Why would you change what's already working?
I got $6 million more of a reason why you can go and do it. That's the biggest thing in all this.
You don't know how much money he's making, though. He could be making.
Okay. Even if he's making half of that, let's say it's $5 million. Joe, for crying out loud, let's say it's $9 million. Let's say it's $8 million. You mean to tell me that people are turning down millions and millions of dollars to go home?
Athletes do this all the time. They stay where they're at and take NFL guys don't just take the biggest offer that's given to them.
Yeah, but you got situations where those guys are getting hundreds of millions of dollars guaranteed. What a red flag for me is you're saying that you're making $4 to $5 million at Ohio State and someone wants to give you $6 million more dollars and you say that you're not going. That's a red flag for me.
But you're just throwing out. We don't know how much money Jeremiah. We don't know what the separation is. We don't know.
Joe, I'm sorry to tell you this. Ohio State is not paying him $5 to $6 million. I'm sure it's around the $4 to $5 million range when it's all said and done.
You're assuming, though, we don't have that information.
Okay. Hypothetically speaking, depending on where everything else is set in the market, do you believe that he turned down half of what he was already making? Because at some point,
we don't know if he was making half.
Okay, at some point, though, you got to concede that he did not accept millions upon millions of more dollars to go home, and I call bullshit.
He spoke on this, why he chose to stay. He spoke on the fact that he felt that it didn't make sense. He said, to be honest, it didn't make sense for me to go back. I have a good quarterback here. I have a good group of teammates here. A lot of people came back, so it looked stupid for me to go there. We have a team here that's already built.
Not $6 million worth. You already got a natty and you ain't winning another one. So butter me up.
What if he's making 9.5? What if he's making 10? What if his agent used that as leverage and went to Ohio State and said, how can you help us get to 10 with NIL? I'm sure he did use it as leverage to get
more money. But it also makes him a legend at a place that he is, and he can force that story out there to make it look like he's more of a legend than he is. Normal human beings don't turn down $5 million when you could double the money that you're allegedly already making.
When he knows he's going to be making hundreds of millions of dollars when he goes to the NFL, I think that the amount of kids that just blindly jump in the portal at large amounts of money that are way more than they're
a normal human being. But at the same time,
that's my point. He has the foresight and the maturity. You heard him talk about finding a girlfriend that what was the one quote that he had? He he had a quote talking about dating girls that, that like a lot of them don't have anything going on. So he won't date girls that don't have anything going on. That's like a, that's like a guy in his late 20s type of perspective. He's an old soul.
He ain't turning down $5 million. You can't convince me otherwise.
We got other stuff we got to get to, as much as I'd like to keep screaming about this.
The NCAA is coming out and stating that after the executive order coming down by President Trump, that they are going to be making rule changes on their NCAA eligibility. On a prospect or high school prospect's 19th birthday, or after they graduate high school, you have 5 years of eligibility once that is over. Here's the kicker. The NCAA did not specify on this. They said no red shirts, no waivers. Your thoughts on the 5 years to play five?
Blake, I think that this structure is exactly what we needed. And I think that this is a really good branching off point. And I think, by the way, as we've already talked about here with these eligibility cases where the NCAA has been winning, sets the precursor for something like this to go through and for the NCAA to continue to have maintained, established consistency for eligibility. This, by the way, was pointed out in this article. This came before the executive order. So this is not a response into the executive order, but it ends up aligning for what was put in the executive order. So that is just one layer for this. Blake, I think that the best part about this is two things. The clock starts as soon as you hit 19. I think that it's great that plenty of guys can play five full seasons. I think that we're going to get a lot more better development for players going on to the NFL. I think we're going to get a lot of better football. Guys don't need to feel rushed about getting onto the field because they might be wasting their time in college. There is a more established, simple process for what you can do in your college career. And the last thing for me that I think is the most important part about this, just saying, cut the crap with the waivers. Done. We're not doing it anymore. No more waivers. That created convolution. And I'm sure when this was originally a concept that was established at the NCAA, is that they thought there was going to be few and far between for circumstances that it would apply for. But everybody's trying to abuse the system. If everybody's going to abuse it, nobody gets to use it. I think that that is probably the biggest thing here is the five-year window and the waivers are completely taken off the table.
I hate the no waivers.
Okay. Okay, why?
Well, because you never know what's going to happen. Like, you never literally know what's... Joe, what's going on with the United States right now? And we don't have to get political. I still hold by the three M's, okay? I do agree, actually, with the debate that is going on of the age eligibility. So meaning 18 or 17 years old, because some players come in at 17 years old, to 22 or 23 after a specific date. Now,
just
go ahead.
Just to clarify that, if they come in at 17, it would start at their high school graduation, not when they're 19.
Correct. But I don't really like the no waiver part. Now, maybe they can clarify that. I still think that admissions need to be amended. And I still believe, which I know that's in the executive order, but the article that I read did not, it said basically no waivers. Correct me if I'm wrong here.
Well, so the three exceptions are military service, religious missions, and maternity leave, interestingly enough.
So the fourth M. I guess yeah. For female athletes, that makes sense. Okay. Do you have a problem with anything on the medical part of that? Like a guy starts his senior year and he gets hurt in his fifth season. Do you have an issue with that guy then just being like, hey, man, you had 5 years. Sorry.
I think sadly, yes, because, again, a lot of players have abused this. You have Chandler Morris, who played over 30 games in his career, trying to argue that he should have been given a medical waiver for one of the seasons that he didn't play. I think if you have 5 years to play and you're getting onto the field and you're contributing, if you lose your last season, it aligns with what we've talked about. This is a really aggressive mentality, but it's kind of like tough, man. Life is tough. Things don't always go your way. If you get hurt at the end of your career, we have to continue to open the door for other guys to be able to step in.
I don't necessarily disagree with you there. It's going to be a hard pill for college sports fans to swallow because, give me a fifth-year senior off the top of your head. Like, you can use somebody, anyone that you just like that randomly pops in your head. I'll give you one. That way no one gets mad. Well, I'll give you one.
Spencer Land's a fifth-year senior.
Well, Garrett Nussmeier.
Okay, easy one.
Easy one.
Easy one.
Right? I mean, like, how mad should fans be that, hey, man, this dude stuck it out. He was behind a Heisman Trophy winner. He stayed here. He got hurt his senior year, allegedly. He got hurt his senior year, and then now he had to go because he had to force it because he was out of eligibility. I mean, I understand that. I don't know. Joe, I got to be real with you. I don't know how to feel about it. I kind of feel like I'm in a situation. I don't know about you. I kind of feel like that I'm going to be really freaking bummed out for that guy or that lady who's in a fifth year, came back for a fifth year, worked their entire career to get here, and then gets hurt because it's something that's out of their control, and then they're just done. Now, that's the part where I just don't know how I'm going to feel. I understand, and in the second part of this, though, I actually agree with you on the other part. We got to put guardrails in place, right? Like, we got to have stern guidelines. And if that is a stern guideline, and players are just going to have to realize, like, hey, man, if I come back for that fifth year, I have the ability to get hurt, then it is what it is. But at the same time, Joe, what's going to happen if a player comes back for a fifth year and gets hurt and they were projected as a first-round guy? Like, I'll give another example, a Notre Dame guy. What about Jay Smith? Like how awful was that situation? Projected top five pick, gets hurt in a bowl game, then goes into the second round to the Cowboys. I mean, what could have happened if he would have been able to have another year of eligibility? I know, but see, then I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. I really don't know how to feel. And I think that's a part where for me that I'm just like, can you get a medical exemption if something bad does happen? And look, we're only talking about on the field. Joe, what happens if somebody is driving home and they get in a car accident? Like, I mean, like, those are things that are out of people's controls. And that's the part where I just don't know how to feel. Now, I do agree that we have to have strong guidelines to people who don't. But I just really have a hard time that, God forbid, something, and knock on wood, something happened to a fifth-year senior. Man, I just know how bummed out I would be. And I'm sure college sports fans would be, too.
And I get that, and I understand that that stuff happens, and it's brutal for athletes when that does occur, that you're being deprived of an opportunity, especially if there are potential pro prospects on the line for you to continue playing and get that final year to really show who you are. But, Blake, I just, at the same time, when you establish the ability for waivers to exist,
they're going to get perverse.
It's going to get completely abused. Mm-hmm. And it is also what has allowed for these lawsuits to occur. The waiver system is enabling certain athletes to say that they don't like the results of the waiver, their waiver being denied. So they feel entitled to be able to take it to court to prove that it's wrong. If there's no waiver system, there's nothing to sue. So that's sadly the world that we're now in. Blake, as much as I agree with you on a lot of these things,
I didn't even think of that point. If there's no waiver system, there really is nothing to sue.
That's why I think that they have to do this. But Blake, all the athletes that fall into the example that you bring up, tell them to blame Joey Aguilar, Diego Pavia, true, Chandler Morris for trying to abuse the system. Because if you create waivers, then anybody could claim that they were deprived of the ability to get onto the field and play. You get a good lawyer, they're gonna be able to create and paint some sort of ridiculous picture, even if it doesn't really apply. So as much as there's the black and white, this kid got hurt, didn't get on the field, he shouldn't be allowed to play, you have plenty of instances where you're going to have guys that, you know, say I stubbed my toe, which is why I didn't get onto the field my senior year, or I didn't get onto the field my freshman year. But I'm saying that, that there's going to be guys that try to have a there are going to be more instances of less than what you brought up and more instances that are similar to Chandler Morris, but more extreme, where a guy might not play as a freshman. And then he'll argue, well, what, my clock technically didn't start because I had X, Y, or Z going on. And the coaches said I wouldn't step on the field because my hamstring was nagging or something stupid like that.
You know, I don't disagree with you there either. You know, when you were talking about all that, you know what it made me think about?
What?
I'm really close to my closest two first cousins, and we always were lumped into the same problems. Like when they got in trouble, I got in trouble. When I got in trouble, they got in trouble. And it's kind of like guilty by association. Like, hey, everybody else perverted this rule and we got to do this because it continues to happen. And it's unfortunate for everybody else in the future. I feel like when that time comes, because the time will come, that when someone gets hurt as a fifth-year senior, it's going to bum everybody out. Like, that's coming. Pause. There will be that situation that arises, and we just sit there and be like, well, because Diego Pavia and because Joey Aguilar, we have to do this, and that is a bummer.
Yeah, that is where I come from. This is that, sadly, you just brought up a really good example. It's like, you know, everybody is getting away with it, and then now, because all these people took it to the extreme, nobody gets to benefit from a waiver system.
I didn't think about that until you said that, about how can you sue a waiver system if there are no waivers?
Yeah, what are they going to sue?
That's a really good point. I didn't even think about that. What is there to sue?
I can't wrap my head. I'm not a lawyer. Maybe we can ask our lawyers to give us what that would look like. But
let me ask you a very dumb question that neither one of us will have the answer to. What does that mean for guys like, as an example, Trinidad Chambliss? What does it mean for guys that are there right now?
So that was brought up in the article that still has to be determined for.
Can you imagine
players?
Can you imagine August the 1st that they tell Trinidad, hey, sorry, this is an executive order. You're going to have to resue.
I think that the intention is that, yeah, it's not going to. I think the intention is to grandfather most of those guys in.
Yeah. Crazy, man. Crazy. All right. Let's move on here. Joe, last topic. We continue on our path of breaking down teams. Tonight, and for the first time this season or this year, we are going into the Big 12. A team on FanDuel who's over-under win total is at 11.5. That is the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Joe, a team that a lot of people had high expectations on, ourselves included, of winning the Big 12 last year, and they did. They got to a playoff. They had a first-round bye, and they took on Oregon, and they unfortunately lost that game. But, Joe, they've retooled. They went out and got a big-time quarterback in Brendan Sorsby. They've retooled themselves along the defensive line and at linebacker. They've went out and got some really productive pieces at wide receiver, and they return a really good tight end and two really good running backs. So, Joe, here's the question. Is Texas Tech now what Texas and Oklahoma was in the Big 12? Or are they starting their dynasty here?
I think that they are, Blake. And here's the biggest thing for Texas Tech this upcoming season. Naturally, when you lose Lee Hunter, David Bailey, Romello Hype, our automatic assumption without looking at the roster, doing any research, the immediate quick jump to conclusion is, oh, this team's losing everything. They're going to be completely depleted. They went on this big run. They put everything towards all the resources towards winning the Big 12 and getting into the college football playoff. They're cooked. Everything's gone. Blake, they have one of the highest totals in the country in returning starters. USC's number one at 15. There's a couple teams that sit at 14, which are the usual suspects. And Texas Tech sits at 13. They have 6 starters returning on offense, 7 on defense. Blake, most of their entire starting offensive line, 2 guys that were all conference players with Howard Sampson and Sheridan Wilson, are coming back. Not to mention the fact that Hunter Zambrano, who only played 3 games last year, that was a highly coveted kid in the transfer portal from Illinois State, is coming back. And also, you've got a really good running back tandem with Cameron Dickey and Jacoby Williams, who made some big plays. But guess what? They're returning one of my favorite players in the transfer portal last year, Quentin Joyner, who injured himself in the preseason. if there's a player, a skill player, Blake, that bursts onto the scene and we say, oh my God, did you see that play from Quentin Joyner? Who the heck is this kid? It's going to be him. Incredibly explosive running back, three deep running back room. They're going to be able to do some dangerous stuff. But Blake, here's the biggest thing as they're bringing back a lot of key guys on defense. As soon as they got Brandon Sorsby, I felt like we all were on the same page that would held them back against Oregon was quarterback play. Baron Morton did some good things in his career, but he just was not ready for that moment. He didn't have the capability to go toe-to-toe with Oregon to win that football game, and he struggled mightily. They needed somebody who was mobile, who was elusive, who's an improviser, who's got a great arm. Brandon Sorsby, from what I had been told over this offseason, there were teams that were pushing him to enter this draft because they would have taken him in the first round. He is going to be in the first round discussion next year. This is a gifted player. Does need some work, but is a gifted player. Like, plain and simple, I think that the hype is legitimate for them to win the Big 12 once again. But as we expand this conversation, and we'll probably get to, the bigger question for me isn't will they win the Big 12 again. The bigger question is, can they win a playoff game this year, and could they maybe shock everybody?
So that's really the question. So can I throw something at you when we talk about when we compare these teams? Texas Tech now may be in a part in a team that we break down that we have to do something very unique for them. Joe, talent v. talent in the Big 12. Even if they don't win the Big 12 this year, talent v. talent, they have the most talented roster in the Big 12. But I think when Texas Tech fans are going to hear us talk about them this year, they have to understand what they're now being compared to. You're being compared to Notre Dame. This is no specific order. You're being compared to Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oregon, Georgia, Texas, Texas A&M. Name the teams. Name the teams that you just, whatever teams you think are going to make the playoff this year, those are the teams now that you have to now compare Texas Tech to. You hit the nail on the head about why they really lost to Oregon. I don't think it was the only reason. Joe, they couldn't run the football. I thought their offensive line got pushed around. I think that, yes, they went out and got a big-time offensive lineman at guard in the transfer portal. But it's not just Brandon Sorsby that has to step up here. They got to be better along their offensive line too. But now I do think that they have more of a fighting chance. I think Sorsby does give them that fighting chance. Arguably, one, if not the second, best overall player in the portal was him. And Texas Tech was able to get him. I do think they've replenished along their front seven. When you go out and get Trey White from San Diego State, who's got 30 tackles for loss the last 2 years and 20 sacks, I loved Adam Trick from Miami of Ohio. A lot of SEC and Big Ten teams wanted Adam Trick, and it was Texas Tech that was able to win out on him. You can talk about pairing up Austin Romaine with Ben Roberts at the linebacker position. There's a lot of things when Texas Tech, Joe, they feel like through the portal that they've reloaded. However, even though my granddaddy told me anytime you say however or but and everything you said before, that's bullshit, I think they're a playoff team. I think they're winning the Big 12. But to the last point of what you stated is the ultimate thing. Can you now go into a playoff game and win one? Because that's now what you're going to be understand now what you're being compared to. So when I compare you and I look at you going into the season, do I have any question whatsoever of you winning the Big 12? No. When I look at your schedule, and I look at your over under win totals on FanDuel being at 11.5, do I think that you're going to run through your schedule again, knock on wood, barring some injuries that can creep up? I think you're going to run through it, as Nick Saban would say, like shit through a tin horn. However, now I'm having to compare Brandon Sorsby versus Arch Manning, Brandon Sorsby versus Julian Sayin, Brandon Sorsby versus Darian Mensah, that wide receiver room for Texas versus the receiver room that you have now. So, Joe, I think that we, as I started this off by saying, I don't know what you want me to say about them. They're going to run like shit through a tin horn through the Big 12, and they're going to dominate him again. Their defensive line is going to be ridiculous. I don't know how you replace a David Bailey, but to win the Big 12, I don't know if you completely need to replace what they did. I like Adam Trick, and I like Trey White, who they got there. Their interior defensive line with A.J. Holmes and the boys. Joe, they're going to dominate a lot of teams. But I do question, when we talk about them through this offseason, is Texas Tech now going to be able to go up against an Oregon again, who, by the way, just returned everybody too? Ohio State, who returned a lot of players offensively too. Now you're in rarefied air. How do you compare to those teams versus the teams that you're facing off in the Big 12? And it's what we used to do every single year with Oklahoma and Texas.
Absolutely. I think where the optimism and the excitement for Texas Tech needs to start with, and why we have confidence that they win the Big 12 again, is because there's still a separation
massive
in terms of offensive line quality and defensive line quality. That was what helped them get as far as they did. And I know that a lot of people look at the game against Oregon and just at face value, you go, oh, they got their asses kicked. Their front seven and their offensive line didn't get their asses kicked. They pressured and got after Dante Moore. They were able to generate some big plays, but a lot of the issues that occurred was Baron Morton having a lot of problems. It wasn't the fact that they weren't equipped to go to war along the lines of scrimmage. They're bringing back a lot of key faces. And I think that now it's one of these circumstances, which is super rare for a team like Texas Tech, where they enter in a new era, is that you had a rotational group of guys that now some of those players are starting to step up. You had a key contributor like A.J. Holmes starting to step up. You have a guy like Ben Roberts who's now going to step up and be a leader for you. It does come down to where the margins now need to get a lot thinner is quarterback play. I don't think it's capable for us to project what Sorsby does this upcoming year, outside of the fact that we can state he's better than Baron Morton. He's a better player than Baron Morton. It's plain and simple. Baron Morton was solid. Sorsby is a first-round talent. Baron Morton was not. He is probably not even going to get drafted this upcoming year.
I mean, was he solid? Because I don't even know if he was solid.
He was solid against
the Big 12.
Yeah, but not good enough to win a playoff game. I think that now that they have him, it increases their chances, but I don't know if that there is a clear answer just yet. We're not going to be able to answer this question the way that I see it until maybe midway through the year. And so we have proof that Sorsby's that dude.
I don't think we get an answer until the first weekend or second weekend in December at fair earliest. Point.
Yeah, because their schedule's not – there's no
BYU.
They don't play BYU.
That's what I'm saying. There is no BYU in that schedule to test them throughout the regular season. The only time that they would face off against them would be in a Big 12 title game. And Joe, I got to be completely honest with you. I mean, remember my big concerns with them? What were my big concerns with all Texas Tech fans were so mad at me about? Brother, if you're giving up that much pressure against BYU, what is Oregon going to do to you? Now, that is last year. Joe, I don't think we have any real answers. We may get glimpses. We will have no real answers about Texas Tech until the second weekend of December. Joe, we were doing this with Ohio State last year.
Yeah.
I mean, we were doing the same exact thing. So this isn't a Texas Tech thing. This isn't really even a Big 12 thing. You and I were out here saying, we don't really know if Ohio State's really being tested and anybody can go up and test them. That's exactly what Texas Tech is going to do. And, Joe, here's another question. When you don't face that level of adversity, does it bite you in the ass in December when you're like, damn, this dude hits hard? Pause. But, I mean, like, when you go up for that for the first time in 15 weeks and you're like, damn, man, we can't run the ball. I mean, they did run the ball a little bit. Williams kind of got moving against Oregon. He had that long run. But I don't even think they get tested. Like, they're that much better than everybody else in the Big 12.
Right. It kind of comes off as them facing a soft schedule. But to your point, they're just that much better. To read through their schedule, like I usually do, there should be wins that they shouldn't have any problems with. Abilene Christian at Oregon State versus Sam Houston, at Colorado, at Cincinnati versus West Virginia, at Baylor versus TCU. Tough matchups. I didn't have any toss-up games, by the way, which are games that they could theoretically lose. There's not a game on here that I see as a game that they lose. The only way that they lose a game on this schedule, Blake, is if they do what they did last year, where maybe there's an injury or something, and they just completely poop their pants against an Arizona State of sorts. Versus Houston, versus Arizona State, versus Arizona at Oklahoma State. To me, there's two teams on there that I think pose the biggest challenges. I think Houston's going to be pretty good this upcoming season, which we'll probably do a preview for them way later on in the offseason. And I think Oklahoma State has they're a big wild card. They're plain and simple. They're a big wild card.
Yeah, does Mesta make her go off? I mean, because, Joe, the one area that Texas Tech did not, they went out and got one player in their secondary. Okay. Now, their secondary really didn't give up a lot. Now, I only got to see you against Oregon, right? The only team that I saw you against that had that caliber of players that you went up against was Oregon. And Dante Moore really didn't have a good playoff run. Let's just call it what it is. He didn't have a good playoff run at all. Joe, I got to be real with you. I think they're going 12-0. Barring injury, barring Soresby going down, massive injuries along both lines of scrimmage, if everybody stays healthy, knock on wood, because I want all of them too. Joe, they're going to run through this schedule like shit through a tin horn.
That's not a hot take. They would need to shoot themselves in the foot to not go 12-0.
Yeah.
The win total is 11.5. It sounds absurd when you said it at the beginning. And then now the more that we talk about it, it's like, is it really?
Well, here's the only thing that I think that can beat them. There's not really an opponent on their schedule that talent v. talent that can beat them. You know what can beat them? Complacency.
That's a good point. That's shooting yourself in the foot is thinking that you're so much better than everyone else.
So, you know, Saban talks about it all the time. Belichick would talk about it all the time. All these coaches talk about it all the time. Complacency is what is beating us. Complacency is what is beating us. So really the only thing. But again, Joe, when I start, we haven't even really done this, right? And we haven't done this here tonight. We haven't compared them to Miami. We haven't compared them to Ohio State. We ain't compared them to Notre Dame. So when you're in unified air at where you currently sit, so now when it comes out and you're in the preseason top 12, and I'm being generous of saying, not generous, I'm being very liberal on saying that they're not in the top 12 because I think that they will be in the top 12 and deserve to be in the top 12. My only problem with them is going to be, it's just like, how do I compare what some of these teams are about to go through versus what you're going through?
Yeah, and I agree with your point again that I think that we won't know until they open up and they need to do what they did last year. They need to open a can of whoop ass against everybody, and they will find out how legit they are when they have that first game.
I mean, can BYU test them? Because I don't think they have the dudes to test them.
I think that at BYU, with L.J. Martin and Bear Bachmeyer coming back, I think that they can. I think that they've got a solid offensive and defensive line. I think that if they have bodies that they're going to be able to – there's a theoretical world that BYU ends up being better than we expect. But I still don't think that they're playoff caliber.
Dude, their defensive line is disgusting.
Yeah. It's damn good.
Their defensive line is very disgusting. So, look, we'll see. And must be nice to be able to buy a roster. I mean, I'd do it if I had shitloads of money. I'd buy my team a roster. I know you'd buy Notre Dame a roster.
LSU just bought a roster. What are you talking about?
Where do you think they got the money? This guy.
Yeah, sure.
All right. We'll see y'all soon. We'll see y'all soon.
Right, we have three super chats.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Elk says, horse manure. Have you heard of Miami? I guess that's to me.
No, I think it's just in general talking about he's saying horse manure to the whole thing. I think in general that they were operating the way that they were.
I just look, I'm not saying that they didn't go after him because this kind of compares to two. Number I heard was 8 million from Miami. Also, Blake, if he's being asked, not sure how freely, just saying freely for no reason. But Elks, hold on. Joe, I'm sorry. He had to have learned from the situation that went viral last week. Somebody got in his ear and said, hey, when you When you say something, it's going to go nuclear. Brother,
Chris Lowe's one of the best reporters in the country, and he has been able to get information out of people that nobody's been able to get out of him. That's all I'm saying, man. I think that Chris Lowe is just a good interviewer.
Yeah, sure, but you got to kind of have your guard up after what happened. And it's the second shot. It's the second shot he took at Miami. For whatever it's worth, you can look, there's only one thing we can agree with. He took two shots in Miami within the last 2 weeks. Is that fair?
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did.
TJ the average says, was it $10 million over 2 years when he was a freshman? So five million a year.
That's a good point. We don't know. So that's kind of part of the whole thing.
That sounds more reasonable than $10 million a year. But he said $10 million if he would have gone in.
He didn't say $10 million a year. He just said $10 million total. That still would have been one of the biggest NIL deals ever if he was
ever
$10 million total.
Yeah, ever.
Good question.
But it is a good point by TJ. It's a very good point.
Good point, TJ.
Yeah, really good. All right. See y'all on Sunday. Peace.